everyone. This podcast is part of Story Mode, the podcast network of Gamefully Unemployed. You can support us and gain access to other great exclusive podcasts at patreon.com/gamefullyunemployed. That's patreon.com/GAMEFULLY unemployed, which is spelled like it sounds.
This fall,
here she comes.
There's a new name for adventure on television. Briscoe County Jr.
You care to try me?
He's all action.
You're not an outlaw.
No.
He's all excitement. And he's about to bust loose into your living room. Welcome to the Wild West, Fox style. And now, the series premiere of The Adventures of Briscoe County Jr.
Hey,
everybody.
Hello.
Welcome to The Adventures of Two Guys Watching The Adventures of Briscoe County Jr., because this one guy made us.
Yeah.
As presented by our Patreon subscriber, Aaron Burser. That's right, you guys. This is a special Patreon series.
It is. If you guys aren't aware, there's a tier on our Patreon, patreon.com/gamefullyunemployed, where you can go and kick us a certain amount, and you get this tier, which means we have to record two episodes of a podcast of about anything you want.
Anything.
And this son of a bitch has made us go back and watch all 27 episodes of The Adventures of Briscoe County Jr., which is a show that aired for one season in 1993/1994.
Yes, if you aren't aware of it, which most people aren't, this is a western sci-fi starring Bruce Campbell that was, I assume, aired on Fox?
It was the lead into The X-Files.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense.
Both shows premiered the same year, and Briscoe was on at 8 and the X-Files were on at 9. And if you've read Bruce Campbell's first book, If Chins Could Kill, he talks a little bit about going on the Fox press tour for their shows with David Duchovny.
That must have been so awesome. So awesome to witness.
Oh, to have been a fly on the wall.
Yep. This is... created by one of the creators, Jeffrey Boehm, is the writer of Last Crusade. He also wrote Innerspace, Lethal Weapon 2 and 3, and The Phantom. just to give you an idea of what the tone is, this is basically kind of inspired by Indiana Jones. He was writing Last Crusade, and he wanted to do another like serial style sci-fi like adventure. But as a TV show.
Yeah.
This is a very hard show to find.
It's not available on any streaming service.
Nope, you can buy it on DVD. You can find episodes on the internet that are very low quality.
We found some on a certain website. It's easy to find if you type it into your Google search bar. You have to sit through a bunch of ads, though, on each episode.
Yes. The point is that we don't expect people to listen along or to watch along with us, necessarily.
Unless you want to.
Each episode is going to cover about 7 Briscoe episodes, because we've determined that through Aaron Burr, the Patreon subscriber, that he wants to do 2 months worth of this tier, which means 4 episodes. You can expect 4 episodes of The Adventures of Two Guys Watching The Adventures of Briscoe County Jr., because this one guy made us.
Yeah.
So yeah, fucking.
That's 4 episodes.
I don't know.
Right? 4 episodes.
Yeah, what did I say? 2?
You said 2 and you're wrong.
No,
it's 4.
2 plus 2.
Yeah, I want to be clear that going forward, we're going to exercise a little more editorial judgment over what we
over,
will do.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, we did this because Aaron Burr, if you're not aware, because I think a lot of people are like, wait, Aaron Burr? That's just the name he goes by. We ask our subscribers, what name do you want us to credit you with? He's been with us for a while. So when he said, I want you to watch 27 episodes of Briscoe County, we were like, all right, for you.
For you, we'll do it. We're not going to watch an entire series for two episodes of a podcast, probably.
That going. Said, well, four episodes.
That's true. That's so. True. Maybe. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll judge on a case by case example.
Well, I think also part of my decision to say yes to this was that Aaron Burr was like, yeah, make these public. These are technically just for Aaron Burr to listen to. He'll probably get copies of them early. But unlike our previous, our John Cass, John would being our previous Patreon, Aaron Burr was very upfront with being like, these are, put them out there. And so I kind of got excited at the idea to be the definitive podcast covering Briscoe County Jr.
Right.
Because I don't think there's another one out there. Someone is free to correct me if I'm wrong.
There might well be, because there's a Quantum Leap podcast. I discovered.
So yeah, there's probably a Briscoe County Jr. podcast.
I mean, Quantum Leap had a more significant cultural footprint than Briscoe County did, for sure. But
yeah,
not one I expected to find in the year of our Lord 2019.
So yeah, we're just sort of diving into this. We have a little bit of an idea of structure. We're probably going to just talk about how we like the series so far, our impressions of it. We're going to go through each episode and we're going to explore some of the details of those episodes. We're going to make predictions of where we think the show's going to go. Tom, have you watched this show before?
Yes.
Okay, I have not.
I saw this show back when it aired. I used to watch, I didn't watch it religiously. I don't think anyone did, which is why it only lasted one season.
Yes.
But I saw a lot of episodes.
Okay.
At least a solid handful.
Okay.
Particularly because, like I said, it used to be the lead into the X-Files. So I would watch this and the X-Files.
Right.
And that was my Friday.
Do you remember where this show is going to go?
No, I only remembered a few details. I remembered that at one point there's a time machine.
Yes.
I remember that I remember that it's funny, like it's mostly kind of funny. Right. I remember that Briscoe teams up with Bowler. Although they start out as enemies, and I didn't remember that.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And I remember that the season/series finale is a cliffhanger. But we get both parts of it. But the cliffhanger, the first part is the two of them tied to a chair and they seemingly get shot.
Ooh, spoilers.
So I remember those details about Briscoe County Jr. and nothing else.
Well, that's delightful.
Yeah,
it's a vague childhood memory.
Yeah, and the whole reason I watched this, there was two reasons I watched the show. One, because it was the lead into the X-Files, and two, because I liked Bruce Campbell. Army of Darkness had already come out at this point, and I saw Army of Darkness in the theater with my mom, and I fucking loved Bruce Campbell. I thought he was
the best. This is right after Army of Darkness. It's before, shit.
Before Congo.
Before Congo, that's it. I was looking this up, and I was trying to figure out where in his career was.
It's before Xena.
Yeah, okay. That makes sense. It's very early Bruce Campbell career. And this could have been his career. Like this
could have been.
This could have changed history. Had it got big.
This show
But
has
it was
a...
kind of it's 93 you said, right? So it's
Yes.
It's like the first of the many shows that aired before The X-Files that didn't really go anywhere. Probably the most successful one was Sliders.
Yes, yeah, because Sliders was kind of in the same tone, too, as The X-Files. Yeah, it was like Earth Above and Beyond, or Space Above and Beyond was one of them, I think.
Really? Mantis, Strange Luck, Millennium.
The Lone Gunman.
Yeah, Sliders. Yeah, Lone Gunman was later, I think.
I don't think Millennium came on the same night.
Really?
I feel like if it did, I feel like it came on afterward. Like, I feel like Millennium came on at like 10.
This isn't an X-Files podcast, but the weirdest part is that it's in the same universe as the X-Files. As we learn later from the X-Files, does a Millennium episode.
Yeah.
But we're not here to talk about the
X-Files. For a second, I thought you were saying Briscoe County takes place in the same universe as the X-Files.
Well,
which it
could.
Might.
Yeah, it could.
It might. It might. It's 1893, so it may just be 100 years before. But yeah, the show reminds me a lot of Firefly.
Yeah, I can see that. What I was saying about the show almost changing history is my first impressions of the show is like, I could see this really taking off.
Yeah. It's unique. It has a good lead. It has a good cast of characters. The adventures are engaging. I mean, it's written by Jeffrey Boehm, who was an accomplished screenwriter.
Right.
And it feels very Indiana Jones in a lot of places. Like, I feel like,
yes.
It reminds me a little bit of, like I said, it reminds me of Firefly. It also reminds me of Young Indiana Jones Chronicles and Amazing Stories.
Right.
So like the two shows that Spielberg was involved with.
It also made me realize that if at the right time they rebooted Indiana Jones, mm-hmm. Bruce Campbell could probably pull it off.
He would. Like, I sent you this. I had to, unfortunately, because of my schedule this past week, I had to watch like the entire batch of
you sure did
episodes for this in a single day. And throughout the day, I was just texting Dave to update him on my progress. And at one point, I made the comment that Bruce Campbell just can't not get the shit beat out of him in every movie he makes.
Yes.
Like, he's 40% stuntman. So he's perfect for like an Indiana Jones type role.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I would love Indiana Jones starring Bruce Campbell directed by Sam Raimi.
That would have been psychotic.
Yeah. That would have been fucking awesome.
It would have been The Quick and the Dead with Bruce Campbell in it.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I guess we should probably get started into the show itself, right?
Sure.
So I guess my first question for both of us is, how you liking it so far?
I'm enjoying it. It's dated in a couple of ways. It's the same year as the X-Files, but the X-Files clearly had the higher production value.
Yes, which is tough because it's a Western.
Right. I think that has a lot to do with it, is that the fact that it's a period piece and it's a Western. So that's like, Jesus Christ, it's a lot of exteriors. It's a lot of set building, right. Whereas X-Files can do mostly location.
I assume they found one town, like one Western town.
And they just keep redressing
shot it from different angles. Yeah, angles and redressing it.
Yeah. I think I read it was shot. I think it's shot in like a Universal backlot or something. It's a specific... Yeah. Western town that they do just keep using it. And
oh,
it's
I'm pretty sure it's the Back to the Future 3 town.
Probably.
Yeah, I think so, because I was looking it up too early on. Unlike you, I watched this throughout the week, which means the pilot episode, the early episodes are a little blurrier in my head.
Uh-huh.
It's a little foggy, but mm-hmm. luckily I have notes.
Good.
Yeah. But yeah, it's definitely, the jokes are dated. It has that.
Yes.
It's like Star Trek TNG non-violence. I think it's even less violent than TNG. It's very non-violent. It's very like kiddie almost.
It's definitely intended for a family audience.
Yes. And it's like, the jokes are very pun oriented.
It's pun heavy, and there's a lot of I mean, there's a lot of groan-worthy puns, which was a highlight that Aaron Burr wanted us to make. There's also just some real corny jokes. Like, it's a lot of... Most of the humor that's genuinely funny comes from the performances themselves.
Yeah.
But there's like a joke. Like, there's this inventor character, Dr. Witwick. I can't remember his name.
Yeah.
The professor who, like, builds a rocket train. We'll get to that.
Yes, we will.
And he's like, he's listing a list of items that he needs. He's like, okay, I need a coat hanger, some fishing line, and some cheese. And Briscoe/Bruce Campbell's like, cheese? And then the professor's like, yeah, I'm hungry. It's like, those are the kinds of jokes you're getting.
The episodes have chapters. They have chapters. And chapter one of the pilot is titled The Blast Supper. And I was like, oh, okay. Okay, show.
I'm here for this.
Yeah, I think we understand each other.
Yeah, we know what's going on. That's a weird. I was thrown off by that at first, but I started kind of grew to enjoy it, the fact that each commercial break has a chapter title.
Yeah, I didn't mind that.
Yeah, it's weird. It's definitely something you don't see.
Yeah, well, it all feels very Western. It's Buster Scruggs. Like, it's and like the zoom in on the maps and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Is all very old Western style, which
I do enjoy it, but I will say that like Briscoe works for this railroad magnate in San Francisco, but most of the adventures take place in Nevada and Utah. So right. we'll start in San Francisco, and then it'll cut to the map showing his trail as he goes into Nevada or Utah. This is in 1893, and he's on horseback. That's a long fucking trip.
That's a long goddamn journey, yeah.
And they really yada yada over it with these maps. I'm like, he is on the road for weeks doing this.
Again, this is a Western,
yeah.
But it's family, so it's not like there's certain things that's just not here, like racism. Yeah. There's a little bit of sexism. It's not as much as I expected
for a show of this type from 1993.
Right. There are light rape threats in one episode.
In No Man's Land, I wouldn't call them light.
Yeah, that's true.
There's explicit
rape threats. Well, they're worded lightly. I don't know. They did it, again, they did a lot of things in a way where it feels like they knew kids were watching. So they didn't they don't want to say or show anything.
Yeah.
People rarely die.
Right, there's even a joke about the one character Pete.
Yeah, who keeps coming back?
He keeps dying and coming back. Yeah. So he's in that way. He's sort of like what was his name? Murdoch in MacGyver. It was the evil MacGyver. Anyway,
right.
Yeah, it's this show is a pretty soft PG-13.
Yeah, if Briscoe wandered into Deadwood, he'd be shocked. Shocked by what he'd see, and he would probably be immediately murdered.
he would also be killed immediately.
Yeah, he'd make one pun and then just shoot him in the face.
He would Swearingen would have his guy whose name I can't remember take him out into the wilderness and throw him off a cliff.
Yeah, or feed him to the pigs.
Pigs.
Yeah, Briscoe would not last in Deadwood.
No, he would get shot the first day.
Yeah.
He wouldn't want to stay anyway.
Yeah, no, he wouldn't want.
Yeah,
he'd be begging for death.
Yeah, he's like an Oklahoma, cowboy. Like he's a cowboy from the golden age of Hollywood. Like he's a very it's pretty soft.
At first I gotta say the first couple episodes I was struggling with this series. And once they find their footing, and once I kind of accepted what I was watching,
mm-hmm.
I'm getting into it. The question, of course, is, would we watch this if we weren't doing it for a podcast? Would I watch this on my own just to check in with Briscoe every week?
Maybe.
Maybe, yes. Maybe is the answer. It's starting to grow on me, but if I had just watched the pilot on my own,
mm-hmm.
I probably wouldn't have watched anymore.
Again, I watched it because I already liked Bruce Campbell.
Right.
And because it was the lead into the X-Files.
He's killing it in this. Everybody's good in it.
This is legitimately probably the best performance you'll ever see from Bruce Campbell. Because it's the most three-dimensional character he's ever gotten to play. Like it's the
right
because he's the lead and he's not a cartoon character. He's not just killing zombies. He's not like it sounds weird to say because it's a Western sci-fi. It's the only time I've seen Bruce Campbell play an actual person.
Yes. I would say Ash versus Evil Dead, you get a little of that because you get to see him. Again, a character you're familiar with, you get to see all these episodes with him, so you get to explore the character more. That's sort of this, is that you just get an opportunity to watch him do everything.
Right, but
emotionally.
In Ash, he's a cartoon character and a dummy.
Yes, Ash, he's still
he's a dummy and
he's not a human.
He's the butt of every joke and he's just like it's a comedic role. This role, it's funny, but he also gets to do actual stuff and have actual emotions and things.
I think he said this was the only time I've ever seen him.
Yeah.
He's had making something. Like, this I think he really enjoyed his time making Briscoe County.
I'm sure. This is the only time I've seen Bruce Campbell cry.
Yeah. Yeah. There's some, man, there's some emotional scenes we'll get to.
Mm-hmm.
There's like legitimately a really good scene in this. I mean, there's a bunch of good scenes, but you know, like a lot of them is like, this is good for something made in the 90s. There's like at least one scene where I was just like, damn, this scene's great.
This is good. Yeah. There is one good scene in this.
And again, we're only six episodes in.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, we're covering episodes 1 through 6 in this one because the pilot is long.
Yeah, the pilot's 90 minutes, which is because I feel like it's justified because this is a hell of a world to introduce you into, and there's a lot they have to explain to you.
The first thing they do is they show us the fucking orb.
Yes!
The first scene is Chinese railroad workers blasting open a tunnel, and they find a giant orb, which, like, to put it the orb in perspective, it's like it's like the size of like 4 basketballs. Like it's pretty big, but not that big. And it looks kinda like if you see an Event Horizon, like the engine in that. Like it looks like it's covered in dildos.
It looks like a big koosh ball, but made of metal.
And it seems to create like lightsabers.
Yeah, you can pull these rods out of it. Like the workers pull this rod out, and the electricity crackles, and it gives them super strength, so they're able to break their manacles and escape. So that's the first thing we see. So they immediately let you know, okay, this is science fiction.
Yeah, it's a hell of an intro. I was just like, whoa.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's immediately sci-fi.
And then we go to a train robbery where we meet Briscoe County Senior,
played by Arlie Ermey.
Yes, it is. That was shocking to me. He's doing a good job, even though he's not even playing a big role.
He's not playing Arlie Ermey, which is interesting.
Yes, like
he's doing like a subtle version of the characters he normally plays. So much so that it took me about 2 minutes to figure out it was him.
Yeah, I didn't even know the first watch. I went back and like I started watching this episode before we recorded just to familiarize myself, and then that's when I noticed. Good role. I looked him up. He's in for 3 episodes, so I think he's in some flashbacks.
Yeah, he's
going to
come back for a flashback because he gets murdered.
Yeah, he gets murdered by a villain I can only describe as Martin Short mixed with David Bowie.
He's the primary mobster assassin from The Untouchables, the guy that Kevin Costner throws off the building at the end.
And he's sort of the primary villain in this.
Yeah, he plays John Bly, who's like the leader of this gang, and his right hand man is fucking MC Gainey. So right away you're like, oh, I know what this show is. He and John Bly and his henchmen shoot Arlie Ermey about 400,000 times.
Yep. After crashing a train because of a painting, they put a painting on the track, and that really gives you an idea of how. Because I will say this show is tonally all over the place, because we start with that orb, and then there's like a Wile E. Coyote roadrunner. They're painting on a mound of dirt, the train tracks on a rock, and the villains are, so the train won't see the rock and they'll hit it. And then the villains is like criticizing how good he is at painting, being like an art critic, and it's like cartoony and weird. And then they run into the train and then they shoot Briscoe County Senior.
Yeah.
And you're just like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. It does tell you right away exactly all of the bases the show is going to be covering.
Yes.
Because that's, I think the guy that's giving the art critique is the character Pete, who's just a lunatic.
Yes.
They make a bit out of the fact that he dies all the time and inexplicably comes back to life.
Right.
They do say later that the painting a landscape on a rock only worked because they had inside knowledge about the railroad, and they knew that the driver had bad eyesight.
Okay.
They do kind of explain how that managed to work.
Right.
Because the conductor does notice that it's a painting on a rock, but it's just too late for him to stop.
Right, right. Okay, that's fair.
So they based it on his shitty eyesight. So they kind of like, when they got to that, I was like, all right, I'll accept that. But also, right. like, at the same time, I wasn't really questioning it because they start you off with a fucking magic orb. So I was like, okay, this right. is just like a crazy universe in which crazy things happen.
It really is. It's like an alternate reality.
Very, very much so, yeah. For sure.
What are the main things in this episode we want to talk about? Because I realize if we spend too much time on each episode...
Okay, the main thing is we're introduced to... the Bly Gang, and that's the premise of the series, is that Briscoe County is hunting down each member of John Bly's gang. That's the overall premise. Briscoe County Jr., we learn, is not a marshal like his father. Like, he went to law school. He's apparently a lawyer, but we meet him while he's being hung for cheating at cards.
He's a real scamp.
He's a real scamp, a real rascally character. But basically, the railroad that had hired his dad to safely guard the prisoner transport has hired Briscoe County Jr. to hunt all the guys down. So basically, they assign him a handler named Socrates Poole, who becomes his Bosley, essentially.
I hate Socrates. I am so... like, when they were first, because as we'll get to, Briscoe's, like, good sidekick shows up later. And so for the first episode, it was like, oh, my God, is this going to be his sidekick? This terrible, like, little scared little man named Socrates.
He's a wormy guy. He becomes okay.
Yeah.
Later
so far,
on.
I hate him. I just want him to go away.
He complains a lot. I understand why he's there. He's there to deliver the exposition that we
need. Apparently that reporter in the first scene where he talks to Briscoe County Senior, according to the trivia, he was supposed to be a regular character so they could deliver exposition, and they found that Socrates, they doubled up accidentally, and they got rid of the reporter character.
Yeah, that's probably a good decision.
Yeah.
Because we didn't need to have... newspaper.
No, we don't need both.
Like, the newspaper features very heavily in the in the pilot episode, and it felt kind of weird.
Yeah.
So, the pilot episode is basically, he goes on his first adventure to track down John Bly, and then he learns that the orb is a thing, and then learns that the guy who was one part of this railroad cabal that hired him was actually secretly in cahoots with John Bly to steal this orb because the government had claimed it.
Yeah.
And he found out that the orb gives you super strength, and he beats the shit out of Briscoe for a minute and then ages into dust.
Yes. Which, again, writer of Last Crusade.
It's a pretty, I gotta say, for 1993 television special effects, it's a pretty bitchin' age to death sequence.
It is good.
It is pretty gnarly.
The other things that stand out in this episode is just one particularly terrible scene where three Chinese guys show up
when they send the bad guys send the Scarred Foot Gang after Briscoe, which is a gang of emancipated Chinese railroad workers led by James Hong. Led by David Lopan, they show up at his hotel room, and he opens the door and he says, "There's a mistake. I didn't order Chinese. I almost turned off the show and canceled this podcast when that
it was
happened.
Pretty bad." And then the ninjas, they're dressed as ninjas, and they fight them. And the weirdest thing is, they look like they're Chinese, but those actors clearly didn't know Chinese, or they were 80 yard later. Because they just make them yell gibberish.
There is when he finds their secret lair below that shop, and it's just them training on top of hot coals. They are 1,000% speaking gibberish.
It reminds me of in Back to the Future, the Libyans. I don't know if you ever noticed they're not speaking
they're
a
just
language.
Shouting, well,
they're just going, oh, and it's just like, oh God, man, you're
the it's this.
You
it's,
live like you yeah. live an hour from here.
Yeah,
they just stuck a bunch of oh, shit yeah, on you, for and sure. they're like, you're it's, a Libyan now.
It's not as it's not as racially offensive, but it's the same thing in Die Hard.
Right,
like in Die Hard, the Germans are saying a couple of German words, but it's mostly like meaningless and like wildly grammatically incorrect.
Yeah, they just like, didn't bother.
Nah. But then James then James Hong shows up, and he obviously really does speak Chinese. So, and there's an immediate, like, you can tell immediately. It's like, oh, he's actually speaking a language. Like the rest of these guys are just saying whatever.
Right. Yeah, that's the biggest, that was the biggest thing that
another thing that gave me pause was he says later on when he's talking about the guys that show up at his hotel room and try to kill him and Socrates, he says three prongs attacked me.
Yeah, I've never heard that word
what
before.
The fuck is that? Is that
I
like,
don't even know if you should be saying that word.
Right, like I have no idea. that is a type, if that is a racial slur, and I can only assume that it is given the context clues, that is some racism I am unfamiliar with.
Yeah.
I have never heard that before.
Some next level racism.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know what that means. Like later, the bad guy later calls them coolies, and I'm like, okay, that's one that I've heard.
Right.
Because it refers to the hat.
Okay.
Yeah, that the Raiden hat's a coolie hat, I think.
Right.
I could be being racist right now. But anyway, there's some old timey racism in this that's so antiquated I didn't even recognize it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's all I can think of from. Oh yeah, you talked about the effects of the guy melting.
It's pretty sweet.
Yes, it's followed up from a part where Briscoe visits his father's grave, and he touches the grave, and I'm pretty sure I hear him rubbing foam. Like, I'm pretty sure that grave is made out of foam.
That gravestone might be foam, yeah.
Yeah, I only know because I made something in film school that took place in a graveyard, and you can't legally film on graveyards, so we made foam graves, and they look very convincing, and then you touch them, and they make that styrofoam sound. So yeah. I don't think Bruce Campbell was supposed to touch the grave, and then he did.
Well, he was so into it. It's a pretty good scene otherwise. Like, he's delivering this really heartfelt. It's the first time, you know, he kind of acts sort of like callous about his dad's death, and he's just like, yeah, I'm just taking this job because it's a job, blah, blah, blah. It's the first time we actually see him deal with the fact that his dad is dead. And it's the first time I've ever seen Bruce Campbell cry. Like, for real. Like, he joke cries in some Evil Dead stuff, but, like...
Yeah, I was about to say, when he's like, Linda.
Yeah.
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 But, yeah, this is legit. I think the first time I saw him cry in something was his X-Files episode, actually. He cries in that.
Oh, yeah.
But I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
I know what you're saying. This is the most human crying moment for Bruce Campbell.
Again, it's, like, the realest character ever gotten to play. Pretty much.
Yeah. He's not playing an over to the top. He's not playing a demon or like a fantasy character or like, I guess technically it's more real, his role in Congo, but it's very short.
Right. So he just gets brained by a gorilla. Spoilers for Congo, I guess.
Yeah. Spoilers for the beginning of Congo.
Yeah. And I know we started out by saying the show isn't really racist, and it's not. It's just that one bit with the Chinese assassins and then something that may or may not be a racial slur. I have no idea. I've never heard that phrase before.
Right. There's a lot of... Yeah.
They introduce... Go ahead.
I was just going to say, the pilot is probably just the weakest episode.
Yeah, because they have to fit in the most explanation. Like, they introduce his professor friend... who builds these crazy inventions that we see again several times.
Right. From here on, Briscoe is actually kind of woke, too, as we'll learn.
Strangely so, yeah. Well, unexpectedly so, for a Western that was made in the early 90s.
Yeah, like, we'll get to that. He's, like, more woke than the 90s around him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Should we move on to the second episode? Do you have any more?
Just that the other major, Bowler is introduced in this episode. He's a rival bounty hunter, and he later pretty much becomes Briscoe's sidekick.
Yeah, and technically he sort of does in the second episode Well, yeah. The second episode is called The Orb Scholar.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched these out of order, so this makes more sense as the second episode than what I had watched.
For sure. He goes to a town to like... he's on the trail of the John Bly gang. He goes to the town to find some other member of it, I guess. And it's this guy named Donovan Joe that he's, I guess, friends with before.
Wait, this is the sheriff, right?
Yeah, the sheriff who turns out to be
evil.
Yeah,
he's the guy who like ran off when he was confronted by the gang when he was young, right?
Yes.
And yeah, he turns out to have double crossed him.
Yeah. And he throws Briscoe and Bowler in jail because they're both there looking for members of the John Bly gang. And then John Bly is there.
Yeah.
But he gets thrown in jail along with this weird old guy who's drawing pictures of the orb in his notebook. And Bruce Campbell, I mean, Briscoe, the last time we saw the orb in the previous episode, it falls out of a train off a bridge in the arms of MC Gainey into a river.
Yeah, he broken arrows him.
Yeah, he broke it. Howie Long and broken arrows MC Gainey.
Yeah.
It's pretty incredible. I don't think we see MC Gainey again. I think he stays dead.
Okay.
But anyway, so it's strange to us, the audience, that this old man has seen the orb, because last time we saw it, it fell into a river and floated away.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't remember too much of this episode. I know they dunk him underwater. This was mostly a boring episode for me, except for this has the one scene.
This is a really great scene.
Like I said, I accidentally watched these out of order. Had I watched this as number two, I think I would have been like, oh, I am here now. I am good to go. Because what happens is Briscoe gets shot and dies.
Yeah.
Episode two. And he is saved by the orb is what happens. He's resurrected by the orb.
It's very Last Crusade.
Yes. But before that happens... it's him and Bowler, and Bowler's just watching him die.
Yeah.
And he sings Amazing Grace to him.
It's
actually really good.
It's a great scene. What happens is
Bowler is...
Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, Bowler is kind of a cartoonish character up until this point. Like, he's like kind of a dummy. He's like, what's his name in Popeye? Like, he's kind of a brute that gets like... kind of outsmarted and is like you can't tell, like, he's not quite a villain. Like, they treat him almost like not effective enough to be a villain. And then this moment, it just humanizes everybody in the room.
It's
great.
It's really good. Like, the episode is, it's basically like the inmates run the asylum now. He gets to the town and it's like all of these wanted men are the deputies, and his crooked sheriff friend has basically turned the town into a haven for John Bly and his gang. So John Bly is there and shoots Briscoe. Like, Briscoe gets the drop on him and is about to, take him in, but his men show up with the orb professor hostage, and he has to give up his gun. And then Bly just shoots him and leaves him there.
Right.
And he gets to, like, Bowler shows up and sees that Briscoe's shot, and he's like, oh shit, like, what should I do? And he's like, just sit and talk to me for a minute. Cause it's like, there's nothing he can do cause he's dying.
Yeah.
And so Bowler just tells him the story of his life. It's like, yeah, you know, my dad died when I was young. And then my mom died of scarlet fever when I was 11. So it's been like, I've just been in my own ever since. But my mom took me to church twice a day every Sunday because she sang in the choir. So that means I got to sing in the choir too. And like, Briscoe's like, oh, so you sing? And he's like, I sing like an angel. And then Briscoe says, well, give me a few minutes and I'll let you know. And so it's quiet for a second, and then Bowler just starts singing Amazing Grace.
It's great.
It's like a really fucking good scene.
Yeah. Yeah, Jesus.
And then
see our main character faced with death, what he would be like. Because, like, you know, like, you're watching the adventures of Briscoe.
Right, you know he's not really going to die.
Yeah, but you get to see him legitimately think he's going to die and what that would do to him. And so that's also a great way to get to know a character.
Yeah, it's a lot is conveyed where he's like, Bowler finishes singing and Briscoe is like, he's quiet for a second and then he's like confused and he says, Dad? And that tells you everything you need to know about the character.
Yeah.
Like, it's like a powerful scene.
Yeah.
In this wacky sci-fi western. So yeah,
I don't know.
Fully on board after this episode.
Yeah, I don't even remember anything else about this.
Oh,
episode.
The professor comes back. Like he leaves. He tricks the guard that Bly leaves behind into thinking the building's on fire. So we know this professor guy is supernatural somehow.
Right. What's the future? Like almost every episode has something that's predicted about the future.
Oh, right. Jet propulsion was the first one. The professor builds a rocket train that Briscoe uses to catch up to the train and thwart MC Gainey.
Right.
In this one, I can't remember.
No, neither can I.
Shit. There usually is some invention that Briscoe is like adjacent to.
Right.
In every episode. It might be, didn't he predict automobiles in this one, or is that a different one?
He predicts automobiles at some point for sure.
Yeah.
I don't remember when.
But yeah, there's a through line of where like Briscoe's constantly talking about, you know, we're 7 years away from the new century.
It's like the coming thing.
It's the coming thing. Like there's something on the horizon. Big things are coming. Like Briscoe is very forward thinking. He's like a futurist in the Wild West.
Yeah. And he's always like oddly
prescient about things. Yeah.
Yeah. It's as if he's being written by writers.
Yeah,
who
in the 20th
in the
century.
Future.
Yeah,
yeah.
So the orb scientist shows back up and tells him to touch the orb, and it brings him back to life. And he goes back into town, busts the crooked sheriff and everybody, and that's it. And then he and Bowler officially team up. Like he rides off at the end. He's like, I'm going to go get John Bly. And then Bowler's riding beside him. Like, what are you doing? He's like, Briscoe's like, what are you doing? And Bowler says, you kidding? I'm going to wait till you find Bly's trail and then I'm going to follow you. So it's it's like Bowler's way of saying, I'm going to team up with you.
Yeah. I'm yours. Yours, baby.
I'm yours. I'm here for you.
And you're mine.
I'm here for you, Briscoe.
Yep.
That's the episode.
That's the second episode. Yeah, let's continue describing episodes of Briscoe County Jr.
Yeah!
Oh, while you watch and exercise.
I'm trying to think
like,
if there's any dumb jokes in this one. Oh, there's... I mean, there was a pretty funny one where he introduces Bowler, whose full name is Lord Bowler, to I think the orb scientist. Oh no, it's to the orb scientist, and he's like, "That's that title sounds entirely fabricated." And Bowler's like, "No, I just made it up."
That's pretty good.
It was pretty good.
Yeah.
Anyways,
so the next episode is episode 3, titled "No Man's Land." This is a very specific reason.
Yeah, again, this is one that really reminded me of Firefly. It reminded me of the Heart of Gold episode.
Yeah, it reminds me almost of X-Files, TNG episode, because it's literally like a TNG episode. Also, Tasha Yar.
Yes, Tasha Yar is the sheriff. Basically, No Man's Land refers cheekily to the town in the episode that is entirely women. It's a ghost town.
No,
it used to be a mining town. The mine dried up, so everybody moved out. But then these women just moved in and set up an entire community. And it's oddly woke for the type of episode it would be.
Yes and no.
For some parts, because they have the one character who she runs the bar. I forgot her name, but she's the bartender. And she's like, yeah, we set up a community out here because out here we can have like jobs and, you know, have like a say in government. And, you know, like it's.
Yeah.
Yeah, we set up a community here so that we can actually like do things.
It is. All right. I'm going to say the episode is mostly woke. Except that it is the broad premise is a town full of women have to be saved by Briscoe.
Yep.
Yeah. But Briscoe is woke the whole time. He doesn't even recognize the fact that it's all women, really. They explain to him, they say like, this is a place where we don't, you know, we can do the jobs like where she's like, yeah, I'm a sheriff. Like, I can fight, but, like, the, no other town would let me do this. Mm. And Briscoe's just like, oh, that's really great. Like, that's it. He's just like, yeah, this is great. You carved out your own little land for your people. You're taking care. Like, he's not even just like, he doesn't even recognize it as a feminist thing. He's just like, this is really cool.
Yeah.
Like, he's just into it. And they do hold their own, a lot of the characters, but it is still like Briscoe coming in and helping save the day and rescue them.
Yeah, they do put him in. And of course,
again, they take care of the course, bartender fucking shoots at a tank like a fucking.
Yeah,
I want a show just about her. She was amazing.
She totally pulls the Tom Hanks from Saving Private Ryan, where she's just shooting at this tank and like, fuck you.
Yeah. And then, of course, she technically gets saved by Bowler. But she's just like, what the fuck was that? Why did you, like, she was just trying to get blown up by a tank. She didn't give a fuck.
Yeah. And they do. I think they still keep Briscoe, even though, yeah, again, the broad premise is Briscoe has to rescue these ladies, but they do keep him pretty well in the helper role. Like he doesn't dispatch a single member of the Swill Gang, it's called.
Well,
by himself.
Yeah, the idea is they don't have guns and the gang does. The Swill Gang, which is Bill, Phil, and Will, I wrote down. But
Bill, Phil, remember. Will, and Gil.
Yeah, because this is the kind of show.
It's the kind of show it is. They move into this. Basically, the broad premise is outside of it, it's a town of only women, is that the Swill Gang, their cousin Eddie, has stolen a tank. A prototype tank from the army, and he's riding out to meet them at this place that used to be a ghost town. It used to be their hideout. So that's why they show up.
Yeah, I really like 90s and tanks, because Wild Wild West did this as well. And I think it's fun watching this stuff now, because we've gone full circle with tanks,
mm-hmm.
where, like, when this was made, it was like, yeah, tanks, they are the future. And now it's like, no, not so much.
Yeah. Let me sort of.
Yeah, we don't really. You know, we really need tanks.
We got that tank stuff out of our system. Now we're.
Yeah. Yeah. I like because it's Briscoe, it's Bowler, and the old man. Who's the old man?
The professor. I forget his name.
The professor. I like that all three of them kind of have different reactions, because Bowler is just kind of. He just cares about, I think, the bounty in this. He's not like...
Yeah, Bowler gets hired to get the tank, and Briscoe gets hired to get the Swill Gang, and we don't find out until about halfway through that it's the same job, basically.
You're right, and Briscoe is just like, this is cool, good for you guys. And the old man is just like, I'm going to try to fuck.
Right, it's so weird. Like, he's immediately into... There are these two just super swole German ladies who are the town blacksmiths, and he sees them and is like, I am here for these German ladies.
He's like, excuse me, gentlemen, I have found my destiny. And that's the whole episode. It's just him with these two ladies. At the very end, I this is the worst pun of the episode, where he stays behind. They leave, and he's like, I'm going to stay. He says, my rocket needs a little fixing. And then he's just like, yeah, these ladies, they're going to pound it back into shape.
Yep.
And it's just like, okay, okay.
Yep. All right, old man. All right, you old weird man. So they do
trying to get your old dick serviced.
They do still have to make that joke.
but they generally it generally
does pretty well. Yeah, it does pretty well. Again, even though the general idea is that Briscoe has to save these ladies, it's like they do a good job of presenting him as presenting them as being equal to Briscoe. Like he's.
Right.
He does every single member of the Swill Gang again. Like it's like they all have to beat them. Like it's like he is assisting them in beating these individual gang members.
Yeah, it's a team effort, and since they're all equally unarmed, they all kind of just have to they outsmart the gang. A lot.
Yeah,
they set a Home Alone trap at one point.
There's a few Home Alone traps.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, it's a very whimsical episode.
It is, and this was one of the first one where I was like, I'm enjoying this.
Yeah, this like, felt, again, it feels a lot like, I said it reminds me of the Heart of Gold episode of Firefly. It's way less intense than that episode.
Right.
but it had the same sort of feel where, you know, like being on the frontier and it's this town full of ladies and they're, you know, some dickhead is trying to move in on them. And then it also very much feels like a TNG episode.
Yeah. TNG, they handled, they go to a planet where women are in charge and they didn't handle it as well, I don't think.
They generally don't in Star Trek.
Yeah.
Like, there's a couple
I think
of,
Riker probably tries to have sex with them and they're all like, women in charge.
Probably.
Look at this.
You think you think Riker probably tries to have sex with
ladies? Yeah, he gets in there. Yeah.
Like they would do this, they would do the initial scan of that planet and they'd get like partway through, it seems to be a town and populated entirely by female, and then the shuttle, they would see the
Riker
shuttle in the view screen already going into land.
God damn it. Oh. Riker.
This fucking Riker.
Yeah. Okay, should we get to the next episode?
Yeah, we should probably move on. And what was the? Oh, it was a tank. That was the future thing in this one.
That was the future thing.
They call it a mobile armored carriage in this.
Yeah.
And there's a hilarious sequence where Bowler tries to get inside of it, and he just can't.
Oh, yeah.
He just can't figure out it's bulletproof.
Right.
They end up branding it with the rocket car, I believe, is how they defeat
yes.
it.
Yes, and I think they kill the people inside, but they kind of. Yada yada over that.
There are people do die in this show, but it's rare.
Yeah,
I think that's one of them. Is Cousin Eddie inside of the tank?
Yeah, it gets blown the fuck up. The next one is was it Briscoe and Jalisco?
Yeah.
This is they go down to Mexico or they go to a set because they don't have much to go by here. It's one like outdoor Mexico set. That they just do everything in front of.
Yeah, it's like this is very much like a Pancho Villa type. So, like he gets.
Yeah.
Pete. We learn that the Bly Gang has stolen some rifles. We find out that it's Pete, miraculously back to life after having died in a previous episode, has stolen a shipment of rifles and is trying to sell them to the ruthless Mexican general. And then Briscoe and Dixie Cousins, who we haven't mentioned yet.
Dixie
is this basically she's Madeline Kahn from Blazing Saddles.
Right, yeah.
She's like also like a revolutionary apparently. Like she's down here in Mexico working with the revolutionaries to try to.
She just sort of shows up
in
random places.
She's the closest Briscoe has to a love interest in this show.
Yeah.
Is Dixie.
Yeah, I do know that the second season was going to focus on them more. It had existed.
Yeah, apparently season two, and we can talk about this more as it becomes more relevant, but apparently season two was going to be more like Deadwood. Like Briscoe was going to settle down as the sheriff of a town.
Right.
And they were going to make that be the...
Honestly, that should have been this show. It makes more sense for a procedural like this where it's just like, what's the new adventure this week, Sheriff? You know, where
it has a solid premise for this first season where he's hunting down each member of the gang. That can take you in a lot of directions. So I get why they went with
that.
And we're thinking of, okay, we can't do the same thing for season two, obviously. So what are we going to do? Well, let's make him sheriff.
Right.
So he's in Mexico trying to get these guns back because that's all the railroad and consequently Socrates cares about is getting these guns back. But of course, Briscoe becomes sympathetic to the rebels and wants to help the rebels. So he finagles a way to basically rip Pete off to get the guns into the hands of the rebels.
Yeah, he gets the gold. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Which my only big thing about this was just how like a lot of the actors didn't seem like they were Mexican. And it felt like this was shot, you know, like over the mountains in LA.
Well, I mean, to be clear, nobody's like they didn't hire white actors in brownface. It's just
no.
These are all local actors.
Yeah,
so.
That's true. It just felt like they overextended themselves for this one. You're right.
The change in the set. Yeah.
Like when they have dinner with the guy and it's just like they show up to this building and it's like this exterior set of like a crumbled, like sort of Mexican style building. And then he's like, let's have dinner. And then they just set up tables outside of the building.
It reminds me of
I thought, like, oh, you don't have an interior, do you?
It reminds me, though, of the wedding scene in the beginning of Tombstone. That's, like, almost exactly what it looks like.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Just a bunch of banquet tables set outside this, you know,
yeah,
structure. I don't know. I mean, with a Western...
Overall, it's a pretty straightforward episode.
Yeah, it's pretty... It's familiar ground. I mean, every Western, I think, eventually goes into Mexico because it's right there.
Yeah.
Like, ride there. This is the most... I'll agree with you on Socrates. This is the most insufferable he is in any episode. He is awful in this episode.
Yeah, he is pretty bad.
And he's... partially because he is just nakedly not concerned with the rebels, or like the fact that the general is like out here murdering civilians because they're just trying to farm the land. He's like, look, we're not, he straight up tells Briscoe, he's like, look, we're not here to be on a side. We're here to get the guns back. That's what we're getting paid to. That's what we're paying you to do. It's like, oh, fuck you, Socrates. You dick.
Fucking Socrates.
Fucking Socrates.
Mm.
Being all... a jerk. I don't know. I lost that one.
Yep.
More like Socrates.
Nice.
Nailed it. That's like a joke that would show up in this. What was what was the prediction in this one?
Oh, I don't remember much of this one.
He says that the rebel leader tells him they're going to name some land after Briscoe, and they say they're going to call it Briscoe County. And I don't know if there actually is a Briscoe County in Mexico.
I assume there's got, I don't know.
I'm trying to think of any other inventions.
This one really.
Oh, here's one. Here's one. When Briscoe discovers that it's Pete, and he's like Pete, he says something. Boy, am I like Pete says. I'm surprised to run into you out here, Briscoe. He's like, I am also surprised. Aren't you dead? And he's like, no, I just got gut shot and I survived. He makes some comment about how he wasn't able to eat for a while because he got gut shot. And then Briscoe says, well, you've really discovered a weight loss secret. And then Pete just kind of looks at him for a second and says, why would anybody want to lose weight? Like, so I guess that's the futurism. He's predicting weight loss. Yeah. Just the fact that, like, Pete is so confounded by that concept.
Right.
Man.
Yeah. Yeah, for the most part, this might have been one of my least favorite episodes. Not because it was necessarily bad, but because it was just so fucking... It was so straightforward.
Yeah, it kind of... yeah. It's a neat double cross. The double cross they pull off is cool. Because Briscoe starts out in one way, because when they're heading out of the mission, Briscoe's like, oh, I know the general. This will be easy. And then he gets down there and then realizes that the general is actually a terrible person.
Right.
And then they finagle kind of a cool way to get the guns into the hands of the rebels rather than into the general's hands. It's kind of a neat double.
Yeah,
it's kind of a neat double cross.
Yeah, he
does it by pretending to team up with Pete. And it's a whole thing. It's a genius scheme.
it's a whole
fucking episode. All right, what's the next one? We gotta get through this.
The next one is Socrates' sister. This is one where Briscoe is like totally gonna fuck Socrates' sister.
He is gonna throw a bone into Socrates' sister, who is Judith Hogue. She played April O'Neil in the first Ninja Turtles movie.
Weird.
Yep.
This episode's about her having bad taste in men.
Well, it starts with him and Bowler catch this guy, Jack Randolph, who is a member of the John Bly gang. And he's like, I'm not Jack Randolph. I'm not that guy.
Right.
And Briscoe's like, no, you fucking are. I know who you are.
Right.
But he swears up and down that he's not. And then we meet Socrates' sister, who she has another Greek name. And I forget what it's like, Iphigenia or something. It's a real strange one.
Mm-hmm.
It's the we find out later that it's the name of... Agamemnon's daughter, I think. So it's, if anybody remembers who that is, that's what her name is. She's a lawyer, and she is convinced of this Jack Randolph's innocence, that he's not the the guy that Briscoe is looking for, and we find out later she's convinced because Jack Randolph has sent her a bunch of love letters and women be shopping.
Right. She is so into this, like, kind of flabby dude. He's like old and he's not.
He's very unremarkable.
Like, yes. He looks like an accountant.
So she was basically she got taken in by him because he was being all sweet on her, and she doesn't think he's really Jack Randolph, and that she's helping him escape because she just loves him. She really thinks he's innocent, and then of course it turns out he's not. He was just using her. And they track him to his hideout where he has this plate for he's stashed this plate for counterfeit money at the bottom of this lake. And he steals the professor's dive suit to recover it.
Yes.
And we find
that is the coming thing is the dive suit.
The coming
suit.
Thing is this dive suit that I'm pretty sure existed before 1893. Yeah. I didn't bother to look this up. But I'm pretty sure the old-timey dive suit existed before 1893. Yeah.
And I'm confident the writers didn't bother to look it up either.
Well, I mean, they have more of an excuse because they would have had to go all the way to a library.
Right,
I could have typed this in on my phone. I just didn't.
Right.
We learned that Jack Randolph's partner is Pete, once again returning.
Fucking Pete.
Fucking
it's
Pete.
It's a running gag that Pete can't die.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Which
someone should look into, but maybe they will.
Right. Like, particularly in this universe, like in the first episode, he has a super-powered fight with an old man who got god powers from a mystical orb. So
right.
He should Briscoe should probably look into why Pete can't die. There's probably something sinister behind that.
Yeah.
Like he's being dragged to the Lazarus pits after each adventure or something. So they have an underwater fight scene. With trying to recover the plates and fight Jack Randolph, and I guess he drowns.
Yeah, I guess.
So they try.
Is that another death?
Yeah.
This is another one where I'm like, I don't quite remember this. I remember the goddamn diving suit.
Yep.
Yeah. And I remember that he's totally gonna fuck his sister.
Yeah, they get
Briscoe's gonna fuck
they get
that sister.
Very close to boning him and that sister.
Yeah, he's gonna make a visit.
He's gonna bone Socrates' sister, and they get there's a running gag where, she breaks Jack Randolph out of jail, and they ride off, to where she thinks they're going to go see this woman who can verify that he's not actually the notorious villain Jack Randolph, but actually he's heading back to his hideout, and he just leaves, Socrates' sister out there in the desert.
Oh yeah, he just tosses her.
Fucking leaves her. Yeah, Socrates.
He's like, you're dead weight.
Yeah, you're dead weight. Briscoe's gonna catch me unless I leave you out here. So there's a running joke where Socrates is trying to ride boldly out into the desert to save her, but he fucking is an asshole and he packs his wagon full of everything he owns, and it keeps
Socrates
breaking.
Sucks.
So they keep doing a bit of where whatever conveyance he's currently using will break, and then it'll cut to some random people who say too much weight and then just walk on. It's a strange
right.
bit. It is a very strange bit.
It is a weird bit.
There's some good stuff in this one though. Like I liked Pete coming back for a third time. I was like, okay, I'm with this character.
You're right. Pete's a great character.
I'm enjoying Pete.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a weird trap. Like Pete ties Briscoe and Socrates' sister up using a piece of rawhide and then pours water on it. And he says,
oh, yeah.
As it dries, it's going to slowly strangle you because rawhide constricts
cool.
as it dries. Yeah, so it was like an interesting trap to use.
Yeah.
And also brutal. Also brutal, yeah, if you think about it. It's like, Jesus Christ, yeah. Pete. Like... Calm down.
Thing.
There's a funny bit where he sends Bowler off to a bee ranch instead of in the right direction.
Oh, yeah.
And Bowler shows up covered in bee stings. And he's like, oh, you didn't really go up to Heart Canyon, did you? He was like, yeah, there wasn't no hideout there. There was just bees. Like he's...
This is one where, because I watched this accidentally second, and Bowler doesn't feel like he's Briscoe's partner yet.
They might not have filmed this one second in order. Like
because
might not
he leaves Briscoe, doesn't he?
He does.
He just
yeah.
sort of is like, fuck you guys. And he doesn't seem like he's with them at this point.
They kind of come back together at the end because he's also trying to catch Jack Randolph.
Right.
So he swims out to the boat, or tries to. Like he's
right, and they have to save
him. They have to save him.
And Socrates is like, oh, it's just Bowler. Don't
right.
save him.
He like tries to, like his sister's
like, Jesus.
His sister's like sees that Bowler's drowning and she's like, I'm a swim instructor. She's like kicking off her boots and her big hoop skirt. He's like, yeah. I'm going to save this. And Socrates is like, it's just Bowler. He's such a piece of shit.
I hate Socrates. I hope he dies.
He doesn't.
Fucking Socrates.
They should just ditch Socrates for. I think in later episodes, his role diminishes, and they because yeah. in my memory, his partner is Bowler. So I feel like in later episodes, it's mostly just Briscoe and Bowler.
Yeah, this also leads me to the next episode because unless you have any more for this one,
other than the bee joke, I don't think I'm trying to think of what the modern thing is in this.
The diving suit.
Oh, the diving suit. That's right.
Yeah.
The diving suit that I'm pretty sure already existed.
Yeah. Because the next one is another one where I'm like, fucking Socrates. Because it begins, this is the one's riverboat.
Oh.
It begins with Socrates being, being in big with a gambler. Like.
Yeah, he sends Briscoe a telegram in the middle of a gunfight with the most dedicated telegram boy ever.
Yeah,
like Briscoe's facing down like two or three other guys, and this kid comes up. He's like, "I got a telegram for you." He's like, "Kid, I appreciate your dedication to your job.
You
but,
could wait. You could wait.
But you
might,
you need to get out of the way." Yeah, and it just says help. And Socrates is in jail in Louisiana, which basically Briscoe goes down to Louisiana to bail him out, and it is just a level from Red Dead Redemption.
Yes. A less violent version.
Yeah, but it's like a series of Red Dead missions.
Yeah. This feels like did Maverick come out already?
No, Maverick came out in 1994. The show did. Yeah, but the movie came out in 1994.
Okay. Cuz this felt like by this point they're just trying to cover every aspect of a Western.
Yeah.
Kind of like Red Dead does mm-hmm. where they were just like we need a riverboat episode. Mm-hmm. We need them going on a riverboat and playing poker.
Yep.
And it's basically like it's fucking The Sting. Like it's a scam episode where they're pulling a con on a con artist, more or less.
This is a really fun episode.
This is my favorite episode.
The con artist
has so many layers.
Oh yeah, it's got a lot of layers. And I wanted to point out that the con artist is played by Xander Berkeley.
Yes.
If you've been listening to Fox Mulder's A Maniac, you'll know that Xander Berkeley also guest starred on Ice, that X-Files episode of Ice.
Yeah. He's John Connor's foster father. He gets stabbed through the throat.
Through the mouth.
Through the mouth.
Through a milk carton in Terminator 2. Yeah. He specialized in playing dickheads in the 90s, and this episode aired like 3 weeks before the X-Files episode of Ice, so dude was getting paid this year.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's Brett Bones, who's another member of John Bly's gang in this.
Yes. And if you could watch any episode, I say this is the first one to start with, because this is the most entertaining.
It's good. It's a fun episode.
Yeah. It's got the bad guy's name is, what's the bad guy's name?
Brett Bones.
Xander Berkeley?
Brett Bones.
Brett Bones. That creates the pun, I got a bone to pick, said by Briscoe at
Oof.
One point.
Oof.
Yeah. But this has so many aspects in it. Bowler is boxing in this.
Yeah, they have.
He gets his own arc with boxing.
He does. He does. It's really funny.
Yeah, and then
I love that. Basically, they. It's the Sting. You're 100% right. They're trying to.
Yeah.
They're trying to screw Brett Bones out of so much money that he doesn't. Basically, he walks into so that he'll walk into a trap that Briscoe. Sets for him.
Yeah, they get him so focused on gambling that they don't know he doesn't notice that they. It's funny because it's the whole thing is very con like, except for the execution of just pointing a gun at the captain and being like, "Get the fuck out of here!" Because they basically hijack the boat while he's gambling
mm-hmm.
and take him into Mississippi. I think.
Yeah, they take him into the next
where day. The idea is he has like immunity.
He has a standing pardon from the governor of Louisiana because he's crooked as shit and, you know, he's got his fingers in a lot of pies.
So they take him into a state where they can actually arrest
mm-hmm.
him. And they arrest his ass.
It's actually pretty good. It's a pretty good, pretty good scheme.
It's a good scheme, yeah. And what's her name is into it?
Dixie. Dixie shows up.
Dixie shows up, and like they try to make it like you're not sure if she's in on it or not.
Yeah,
but it's pretty clear.
They make it seem like she's rolled on Briscoe.
Yeah, but really she's all.
But
part
they're
of the
just
plot,
fleecing him, baby.
Yeah, it's a really fun episode. This was when like they were really like maybe there'll be better episodes coming up, but this was the first one that I was just like, all right, I'm in this.
Yeah,
I'm in it. This is really fun. Unfortunately, it's the last episode that I had to watch for this podcast, but
yeah.
Like I'm greased up. I'm greased.
Yep.
I'm doing it.
Ready to get into the county.
I'm ready to get in. Yeah. I'm ready to slide through that county.
Briscoe wears an outfit he's masquerading as what does he call himself? Roscoe something.
What?
His alias is like Roscoe Merriweather, I think. Yeah.
Something like that.
Roscoe
yeah.
Merriweather. His outfit that he wears is 10,000% the gambler outfit from Red Dead Redemption 2.
Yes.
It looks exactly like it.
I don't know if Rockstar is a... Like, they must have researched, done a lot of watching Westerns and shit.
Yeah.
Leading up into this. So I wonder if they watched some Briscoe County.
I suspect there's one or two members of the Rockstar team that are Bruce Campbell fans.
Yeah.
I'd say that overlap is probable to likely.
It would be amazing if there were like an incredible amount of Briscoe County references and yeah, fucking
just an exhaustive amount.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. This made me officially excited to continue watching the show.
This is the best. This is probably the best one. Because the Orb Doctor, the second episode, has that really great scene, but the rest of the episode isn't great. This is like strong from start to finish. It's really tightly written.
Yes. This is when they were getting their stride. They were figuring it out.
And again, that guy Xander Berkeley is a solid guest star. Like, he's great in this episode.
Oh, yeah. Great villain.
He's a great villain. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there was... What was the... Oh, the okay. They predict denim in this.
Oh, right. They predict denim, which was a hell of a fucking weird thing to predict.
Yep.
Because... it's another one where Briscoe, he's so forward thinking that it's like cartoonish.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's that where it's like he's like, I don't know, I think they would go great as pants, maybe dye them and fade them. And it's just like, stop it, Briscoe, you don't have to be so right.
Yeah,
like they kind of overwrite him to be that on the nose, and it's like cartoony.
I think but the fact that it feels very intentional to me that it's right. That it's that cartoony.
Right, yeah. Maybe, I don't know, maybe the reveal is that he's a time traveler.
It fucking might be.
I remember a time machine,
I'll tell you that much. Yeah. But
well, I know because when I was finding the episodes, mm-hmm. I accidentally clicked on a later one of that orb and it was like crackling with electricity, and the guy was like, my time machine, and I was like, what the fuck? And it was just this moment of like, what is Briscoe County? Because I did not know it was sci-fi at all.
Oh yeah,
that
turbo
was
sci-fi.
A shocker.
Yep.
So it was just like, what am I in for here? And I'm very excited to learn where this goddamn plot is happening. That's why we should get into just finally predictions, which I don't really have much at this point. I think that my prediction is that Briscoe and Dixie are going to have a relationship. That Bowler will still be a sidekick, but maybe get his own relationship going or something. There's got to be a bright future for Bowler. And then that there's going to be time travel. I want to predict that Briscoe will briefly go into the future and they'll shoot a scene in the 90s. That's what I want to see.
I feel like, again, I have seen this show, but it's been like 25 years. So what I said at the beginning was literally everything I remember.
Right.
I feel like he does travel through time.
He must. You can't introduce fucking a time machine and not have it travel through time.
I feel like he travels through time.
Gotta get some dinosaurs in there or something.
Maybe. I don't know. Other than that, I can't, man, predictions. I feel like
it's hard to know where this will go. It's fucking weird.
I feel like we're going to find out that the orb is alien.
Okay. I think the orb is from the future because if it makes them go through time. I think it's like future tech, because the whole show is about the coming thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about the future, the future, the future.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we're going to get some time traveler, at least a time traveler coming back to us,
mm-hmm.
to tell Briscoe about the future or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's a solid prediction.
Yeah.
For this 25-year-old show.
Yeah. 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 Anything, any final thoughts?
No.
Okay. Yeah. I think we pretty much covered the first 6 episodes of Briscoe County Jr. I think we did a good job.
Yeah. It has a lot of elements.
It does.
This, I feel like this could have been a show. This could have been a thing.
This could have been a thing for sure. Sci-fi Western. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, we have that now. It's not quite this.
No, it's Westworld. But I mean,
yeah.
But yeah, I feel like this could have taken off as it's I don't know. It's weirdly charming. In its way.
Yeah.
Even though
it
doesn't do everything right. But
right.
But yeah, we're going to watch the rest of these, so
yeah, we really are.
Be ready for
that
shit.
Yeah, guys. Yeah, thanks for watching The Adventures of Two Guys Watching The Adventures of Briscoe County Jr. Because This One Guy Made Us,
mm-hmm.
as presented by our Patreon subscriber, Aaron Burr. I hope you enjoyed this.
Yeah, and if you're interested about how you can make us watch things, although probably not as much, head over to patreon.com/gameplanemployed, where you can kick some bucks to support us and get some other exclusive shows.
And if you're Aaron Burr, thanks a lot, buddy.
Thanks, pal.
For
shum.
Making us do this.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's get the hell out of here.
We appreciate it. All right. Goodbye, everybody, especially Aaron Burr.
Particularly Aaron Burr. Good.
Yes.
Bye.
Now, stay tuned for scenes from next week's Briscoe County Jr.